This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Louise and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
My name is Stu and I am an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Joe. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognize it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of this disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and a thousand is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This is what makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who's just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. And we're just about to interview an AA member who's going to share their experience with alcoholism. So let's meet our guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Stu and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Stu, welcome to the show. Do you want to tell us how long you've been sober?
I've been sober 2.5 years.
Brilliant. And do you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself? Where do you work?
What? Yeah, I'm an accountant and a business owner.
Brilliant.
Help businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Three children.
Yeah. Awesome. That's really cool. And you're from Christchurch?
Yeah, I was born and brought up in a small town, but moved to Christchurch. Mm-hmm. When I left school.
To the big smoke.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about, you know, what it was like when you started drinking. How old were you when you had your first drink?
I can recall my first drink quite vividly.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was 13.
Yeah.
around that age, and I've definitely had the restless discontent going on, and at that point my grandfather had died, and I had a big gaping hole, and I picked up that first drink from the liquor cabinet, tasted it, and I thought, yeah, I've found my nirvana.
Wow.
And that, and I, it was almost immediate feeling.
Yep.
And that's where the craving kicked off.
Yeah. So at 13, so you don't, you know, did you, you have siblings? You know, was there something else you saw in your family?
So my sister, I've got a sister, and she's nearly 5 years older. And my mother's uncle was in recovery.
Oh wow! Okay, so you knew about Alcoholics Anonymous or recovery, or
and our family has got a history, but also a history of denial.
Right.
Yeah, and under the closet, under the covers, sort of about it. Yeah, not a lot of talk about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
So you know, after that first drink at 13, what happened from there?
Well, I was a teenager and I was having growing pains and trying to find my way in the world. But I started to get into a little bit of trouble.
Okay.
School grades were dropping. Yeah, my family was a good family, good middle New Zealand family, and we never wanted for anything. But at the same time, I also got addicted to busyness. So I'd go to school, do an after school job, bike ride. And my head would go crazy, and I'd do everything I could to stop my head going crazy, and that's where the alcohol would help. And I started mixing with groups of other guys that were of the same mindset.
Right.
And we were starting to get into trouble with the law and school and with our parents and, you know, falling into all the traps of lying and hiding booze and hiding... and also experimenting with other drugs.
Okay.
So it was all starting to kick off. Yeah.
And what happened as you sort of went into to adulthood and, you know, into your 20s? You know, how did that change? Did your drinking...
Well, looking back, I did a geographical.
Okay.
So I started to get in trouble when I grew up in a small town, started to get in trouble with the police. I got my driver's licence and then promptly lost it.
Okay.
DIC. And a part
in
of
your teens.
Yeah, and a part of what the judge says was I had to start going to a meeting on a Thursday night.
Oh wow.
And I turned up there at this place and it was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting.
And you didn't know that's where you were going?
He probably told me, but at that point, so I did 12 meetings in 12 weeks, one a week, because that's what the basically a part of the sentencing was.
Yeah.
And I had no driver's license and I was pretty ashamed.
And what was that like as a what did you say, 18-year-old going to an AA meeting?
The whole thing, because I'd been up in court, was I was getting a little bit desperate.
Right.
So I knew I had a problem with alcohol, and my life had become unmanageable. But after 12 weeks, it became manageable again, and I took it all back. And after that point, promptly left town and got a job and left school.
Yep.
Left all my, what I thought were my bad friends behind. But basically I just packed my same bag and took it to a different location.
Yeah. So once you moved to this new place, did it feel different?
Felt like I'd been let out of prison.
Okay.
And so I could manage my drinking to a certain degree, but I was a binge drinker. So the craving would build up over time.
Yeah.
So I could pretty much go Monday to Thursday without a drink. But Thursday night was always the big night for a start off.
And did that start to have an impact on your ability to go to work on a Friday?
Yeah, certainly my work performance.
Yeah.
But I also did a lot of travelling. So I saved up some money and then travelled for months and then come back and save up some money. And so the binges could be... quite a few months apart. I could actually be sober for quite a few months.
Okay.
Because the travel would fill the gap.
Sure.
Fill the gap, and I had no money, so something had to give, so it would just be more travel to fill the same gap that alcohol would fill.
Right.
But when the travelling was over, by my mid-20s or late-20s, then that's when the alcoholism really started to bite to fill the gap.
Yeah. So tell us what was it like? What was the drinking like then?
I was still binge drinking, but I was starting to get into trouble.
What sort of trouble?
Basically, with my wife.
Okay.
And we started a family. And then later on, I ended up having a few accidents, being in hospital,
mm-hmm.
stitches. And I couldn't, I could not control my anger as well.
Wow.
So I was always picking fights with people.
Okay.
And all my relationships with my parents were falling down. Didn't speak to my sister for a few years. All those sorts of relationship issues started to creep in.
And at any point, you know, when some of these incidents started to occur, did you ever try to stop?
There was two quiet turning points where I tried to stop on my own will,
mm-hmm.
And also look for an easier, softer way.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was 32, my wife was pregnant with our first child,
mm-hmm.
and I thought I was stressed. So I went to the doctor and I said, there's something wrong with me, you
mm-hmm.
have to fix me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went on antidepressants.
Okay.
I basically was breaking down in his rooms. So that was looking for an easier, softer way, because, of course, he did ask me how much alcohol I drank, and I did lie, of course.
Right.
I said a couple here and a couple there.
Mm.
and then another incident happened on the celebration of the millennium.
Okay.
So I got very drunk. I had a bad case of alcohol poisoning.
Oh, wow.
And my mother-in-law was most ashamed of me.
Okay.
So I managed to stop drinking for nearly 2 years.
Oh,
okay. On my own will, and my life got so much better. My physical health improved, all my relationships got better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then one day I thought, I can drink like everyone else now. I'm better. You know, look at my life, it's all wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And things are going really well. And that I can remember that thought of, yeah, I'm just like a normal person again.
Yeah.
I can have one on Friday, yeah. Two on Saturday, three on Sunday.
And what was it like when you first picked up that drink after 2 years of not drinking?
It was like the beginning again. I remember the first taste of the alcohol, and it was like, yeah, I'm back.
And did your drinking, was your drinking the same? Like, had you know, or did you manage to control it?
No, it was binge drinking again.
Straight back in.
Yeah.
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 Wow.
Yeah.
And so what happened from there?
I did have a few goes. So I started getting in trouble in my workplace with
mm-hmm.
my boss. So I had a senior position
mm-hmm.
In a big firm, and where there was a lot of reputation
mm-hmm.
maintenance needed in the role. And I used to go to all the work dos and get horribly drunk and do silly things. And so it was not ideal. So my boss and other people in the workplace were starting to get concerned.
And they'd say something to you?
Yes.
And how did that make you feel?
Ashamed.
Yep.
Guilty, remorseful, and I would double my willpower against it, say I'm never
mm-hmm.
going to drink again.
Mm-hmm.
I would make that statement, swear off.
How long would that last?
Usually it lasted from the Monday morning tell off to the Thursday
night.
If I was lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Like incidents would be happening, like my father-in-law would have to come and pick me up from the gutter and things like that, when I'm supposed to, you know, three young children, a position of responsibility.
And how was your relationship with your wife during this?
Tense would be an understatement.
Sure.
She was really trying to help me,
mm-hmm.
and her parents as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And your relationship with your own family?
Well, I had a falling out with my mother, quite a serious falling out, and it was also because I bought my business from my father, and there was quite, you know, a bit of stress around that, and my father was going through a cancer scare at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, instead of pulling together as a family, we actually broke up as a family. And if I look back, it was all a lot to do with my alcoholism.
Right, right.
Yeah. I couldn't maintain relationships because I was moody, grumpy,
mm-hmm.
drunk, hungover, all of the things.
Mm. All of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always restless, irritable and discontent 100% of the time. And so all the people around me would wonder what they'd done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But really it was in me going crazy. Yeah.
And so so at this point you've got three children and work starting to get a bit icky.
Yes.
And so what happened from there?
God stepped in.
Okay.
And we had the most massive earthquake in the history of Christchurch.
Wow.
And I was actually in the lawyer's office, my employment lawyer, discussing my employment dispute
Wow.
With my boss. Oh, well, no, not with my boss, about my boss.
Wow.
When the earthquake hit. And I'd actually been attending a few AA meetings just before the earthquake.
Okay, but still sort of drinking in between.
And we're trying to get sober, yeah. But I was trying to do it to save my job and my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, I'll just get the heat off by going to a few mm-hmm. AA meetings
mm-hmm.
and shopping around and just going like on once a week. Or
mm-hmm.
Then the earthquakes came, and 3 weeks, I've heard this many times since and before, within 3 weeks I was back drinking because I didn't go to any meetings mm-hmm. or didn't do any... Mm. Any work on the program,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I negotiated out of my job,
mm-hmm.
got a payout, and then started a consultancy business.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my clients owned a pub, right. very conveniently. So for me as a drinker, so my drinking accelerated.
Mm-hmm.
So my binges would start on Thursday night and end on Wednesday night. Like the whole week would be just binge drinking.
Wow! And would you go? And you know, your family was. How did that affect your family?
My wife at the time, my ex-wife now, she knew I was going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't really know. She was in this frustrated place mm-hmm. where she knew she couldn't fix me, but mm. she wanted to.
Mm.
Yeah, so it was would have been just chaos for them.
Yeah.
And,
So tell us, you know, what was it that brought you to, you know, what do you consider your rock bottom?
So in 2013, 2 years later, my mother got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer,
mm-hmm.
And it was her wish to not die in a hospice.
Mm-hmm.
So me and my sister nursed her for the last 10 days. So I had to stay sober for 10 days, which was, at that point, was very, very difficult.
Yeah.
But we were taking shifts, me and my mm-hmm. sister. So she passed away, and then... I basically went on a 90-day rampant binge and left my wife. All my business was falling down. I couldn't really go to work.
Mm-hmm.
I was sleeping on a mattress in the back room of my friend's house with nothing really.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd also been to a doctor because I was having back problems, and he mentioned, "How's your drinking?" And I'm like, "Why are you asking?" So he said he referred me to a drug and alcohol psychiatrist,
mm-hmm.
and I actually went. Yeah. And I was said to him, and also two or three friends had said, "Oh, you think you got a problem with drinking?" So I said to this psychologist, "Oh, I think I got a problem with drinking," and he goes, "Well, you're the only one that can say that."
Mm.
And I'm like, "Well, how do I know?" And he says, "We'll do this test. if you can drink 12 to 14 units." per week, then you're probably a moderate drinker. So go away, come back in 7 days and tell me how many drinks you had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I lost count on the first night. I'd had exceeded the week's lot on the first night. And I went back home and said, "I've definitely got a problem with alcohol, now what?" And at the same time, another friend had said, "Oh, you know, X person, he's in the program, he might be able to help you." So all these things pointed to, you know, I've got a problem with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
My life's become unmanageable. There's no way out of this except joining a program.
Mm-hmm.
So I rang the person in the program,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, "Oh, this is going to save my life." And to my disappointment, the phone call lasted 1 minute, and he said, "There's a meeting on Thursday night. I'll come and pick you up and take you." And that was the beginning.
So, tell us, what's your recovery been like since then? What have you done to maintain your sobriety?
So at first I was going to one or two meetings a week,
mm-hmm.
And my sobriety was very thin.
Yep.
And so I go to a meeting Thursday night, and by Tuesday I was going crazy.
But were you drinking?
I had a few relapses.
Sure.
And I was working with my sponsor, and my sponsor never gave up on me, and I never gave up on the program.
Okay, so you kept going back,
yeah, and listening to the message,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of what I heard was keep coming back. Some people get it quickly, some people get it slowly.
And to hear that, was that a relief to hear that and to be welcomed back in no matter what?
It really just heightened my belief,
yep.
that there was a solution,
mm-hmm.
and the only solution was in the rooms because I kept trying other things.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you talk about a sponsor. So sponsorship is something that's been important to you with your journey?
Yes, I couldn't have done it without a sponsor.
Okay.
Yeah.
And having someone else to give you that guidance.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us, you know, what is it, we talk about AA, you know, not being a religious program but a spiritual program. What is that like for you?
That took me a long time to get a grasp of.
Okay, so it's changed over the years.
Yes, at first it was my sponsor. He was my higher power.
Okay.
And then the group became my higher power.
Mm-hmm.
So a group of drunks,
mm-hmm.
G-O-D.
Mm-hmm.
And then after probably 3 or 4 years, well, this what really helped me to completely stay
mm-hmm.
sober
mm-hmm.
Was that I could actually make contact with my personal higher power.
Mm-hmm.
And maintain that contact.
And that was completely up to you.
Yeah.
And we also talk about, you know, service, you know, putting ourselves out there to help others.
Yeah.
How important has that been to you?
Oh, that's been huge. So my sponsor tried to get me into service very quickly.
And what sort of service was that?
Oh, the first things were like put cups of teas,
yeah.
Notice board,
yeah.
And then I got other roles like group secretary, mm-hmm. group treasurer.
Yeah.
And I've now got I've had a sponsee for 1.5 years.
Brilliant.
And that's really stepped up the program for me.
That's
But also I've had tried to 12-step a lot of, mm-hmm. especially young fellas in their 30s and stuff.
Yeah. And you know, we also talk about the steps, and so the 12 steps.
Mm. So my sponsor got me onto the steps early,
mm-hmm.
and I did the best I could at mm-hmm. the time. But I've since done 3 more step 4 and 5s with the same sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And I've now taken my sponsee through 12 steps. So the steps are a huge part for me.
And how would you describe your life today?
My life today is so much more improved. It's never going to be perfect,
mm-hmm.
but it's definitely progress.
Mm-hmm.
And just it's just a relief not to be fighting everyone and or anyone
and
or anything.
And, you know, in those times when, you know, it might be difficult, what do you do to maintain your sobriety?
So maintenance for me is every morning I try to do readings and prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty good at it because I know if I don't, then my day mm-hmm. doesn't go so well. Talk to my sponsor, talk to my sponsee, get to a meeting, talk to other alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
And if during the day it's going a bit sideways, I try to take myself off and do some prayer and meditation.
That's awesome. Hey, well, Stu, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome.
I'm so grateful for this show.
Brilliant. So for our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There is over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can also find podcasts of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download and subscribe to podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.